Good morning. It's good to see everyone. The Bible reading this morning is from 1 Kings chapter 8, verses 1 through 5. Then Solomon assembled the elders of Israel and all the heads of the tribes, the leaders of the fathers' households of the sons of Israel, to King Solomon in Jerusalem to bring up the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord from the city of David, which is Zion. And all the men of Israel assembled themselves to King Solomon at the feast in the month of Ethanim, which is the seventh month. Then all the elders of Israel came, and the priests took up the ark, and they brought up the ark of the Lord and the tent of meeting and all the holy utensils which were in the tent. And the priests and the Levites brought them up. And King Solomon and all the congregation of Israel who were assembled to him were with him before the ark, sacrificing so many sheep and oxen that they could not be counted or numbered. First of all, let me say, when I tried to load my PowerPoint this morning, it says it's a corrupted file. It was fine online at home, so we'll just do without that today. This passage is at the dedication of the temple. So last week we talked about the construction of the temple, and now 7.5 years later from the time the construction began, the temple is now completed and ready to be put into service. So as you might expect, something that was that anticipated, if you can imagine people in Jerusalem seeing it as the progress on the Temple Mount just kept improving, getting bigger and so forth, the excitement building. And so what we're going to do on the little bit of time we have this morning is summarize the various aspects of the temple dedication. This is a lot like last week's lesson about the construction. There's not any way in which we can basically read all of the passages in their entirety. So we're going to simply refer you to most of the passages and have an overview of what actually took place. And so the first event that was described as in our Bible reading this morning is that the ark is moved from the tabernacle tent into the completed temple. 1 Kings 8, chapter 1, all the way through verse 11, and also in 2 Chronicles chapter 5, verses 1 through 10. The one question that comes up, which there is no real answer to, is what happened to the tabernacle. If you noticed in the reading, it said that the ark and the tent was moved to the temple. And so there is no record of what happened to the actual tent after the temple was dedicated. There were storerooms all around the temple, and so whether it was stored there for some reason, nobody knows. At least nobody that I think you can listen to what they're saying has any idea about that. And so the ark is moved in to the holiest of holies and put under the outstretched wings of the cherubim. And so there's two other observations made in the passages about the ark. One is that the poles were left in place. The poles were ordered by God for the ark to be moved while the people were journeying from Mount Sinai to the Promised Land. We all remember the story of them trying to move the ark on an ox cart rather than using the poles and how that resulted in Uzzah's death. So now they're moving the ark into its permanent home, and they leave the poles in place. They will not remove the poles. And so it tells us that priests who were serving in the holy place before the veil was put up could look into the holiest of holies and they would see the ark with its poles extended. But people outside the temple, the normal people, the lay people, from outside the temple you couldn't see that because of the obstructions that were in place. And so once the veil was in place, nobody could see into the holiest of holies, and only the high priest went behind the veil once a year on the Day of Atonement. And so that's one of the things that it tells us about this. And the second thing that it tells us is that at the time of the dedication of the temple, The only thing that the ark contained was the original tablets of the law. Whereas when they were wandering in the wilderness, we are told that a pot of the manna was put in the ark, and also Aaron's rod that budded to demonstrate that God was choosing him to be priest was also put in the ark. And so by this time, those were missing. Now, again, no explanation. We know that the ark was in the hand of the Philistines for a while, but there is no other information about what happened to those other two things. But what we do know is when the temple is dedicated, the only thing left in the ark is the original tablets of the law that Moses brought down from Mount Sinai. So we're told in 1 Kings 8, 10 through 11, and 2 Chronicles 5, 11 through 14, that once the ark is in place, that smoke fills the temple so that the priest could not even see because of the denseness of the smoke. The second major thing about the dedication of the temple is that Solomon addresses the people. And the great assembly of the people, they would not have been allowed into the holy place or the most holy place, obviously. But they could have assembled in the courtyard and the outer courtyard. And at some place there was for Solomon to stand before the people and speak. And so in 1 Kings 8, verses 12 and 13, it says, Solomon says, "The Lord has said that he would dwell in a thick cloud, and I have surely built you a lofty house, a place for your dwelling forever." So that expresses the reason behind the building of the temple. And then in a very lengthy speech, as far as the Bible recording speeches, there's a couple that are longer in the New Testament, but for the Bible recording of speeches, Solomon's is fairly long. And in it, he begins by blessing the Lord. Then secondly, he reminds the people that his father David had desire to build the temple, but that God had appointed him, Solomon, to actually carry out the work. And that God, in doing this, had made known his choice. One, that the house of David would rule over his people. And secondly, that Jerusalem would be the place where he put his name. Thus, God selected that the temple would be built in Jerusalem. And so, at the close of his address, Solomon declares that the temple is now the place where the ark and the tablets of the law would remain. And so, it's not going to move around anymore. It has a permanent place within the kingdom of Israel. Then next, Solomon says a prayer, which again is a rather lengthy one in terms of the prayers that are recorded in the Bible. And this is found in 1 Kings chapter 8, verses 22 through 53, and 2 Chronicles chapter 6, verses 12 through 42. So a prayer that's approximately 30 verses long. And again, the prayer has several important parts. First, he begins with praise and supplication to God. He praises Yahweh as the one true God and acknowledges that. And then he asks that Yahweh keep the promises that he made to his father David. And he even states in the prayer the conditions that God gave David and that was passed on to Solomon, that I will do this as long as you keep my statutes and so forth, which if you know the history of Solomon becomes a problem because later in life he ceases to do that and that results in disaster for the people. Then Solomon in the prayer acknowledges that the temple is a sign of God's presence in Israel and recognizes that it's only a symbol because he says in 1 Kings 8, 27 to 30, and again 2 Chronicles 6, 18 through 21, that God cannot be confined to a temple that man has made. And so he says, realizing you dwell in heaven, this represents your dwelling among the people of Israel. And then he calls upon God to hear the prayers directed towards the temple. So this is what leads really to the Jewish practice of wherever Jews were during this time and the time between this and actually the destruction of the New Testament temple by the Romans in AD 70, that essentially when Jews prayed, if they were not in Jerusalem and in the temple area, they still faced towards where the temple was located, because they directed their prayers towards the temple, because that was the place where God said he would dwell among his people. But what is interesting is how Solomon talks about this. He talks about five situations, and he says when an individual sins against his neighbor and he prays towards the temple, forgive him of his sin. And then he says when the nation prays. And so he sees a situation where the nation has a reason as a nation to pray. And he mentions three things: when you have been defeated in battle, or when there's a famine, or when there's some kind of natural disaster, the whole nation should pray towards the temple. The one that is most interesting is the third thing he says is if foreigners come to believe in you and they pray towards the temple, hear their prayers. And what's interesting about that is by the time of the New Testament, that's not the Jewish attitude about somebody that is not a Jew. They detested them. Here Solomon is asking God to hear them and accept them. Then the fourth situation is pray towards the temple before you go into battle, that God will be with Israel. And then the fifth one, which is also very interesting, he says when you have become so disobedient that God takes you into captivity and takes you out of the land, while you're in captivity, pray towards this temple. And of course we have that example in the book of Daniel, that Daniel's in Babylonian captivity, and every day he opens his windows and looks back towards Jerusalem and prays towards that temple. Then the next part is Solomon's benediction, and I am going to read this. I'm going to read the 1 Kings version of it. It's 1 Kings 8, verses 54 to 61. There's another record of it in 2 Chronicles chapter 6, verses 40 through 42. But after Solomon has done praying, he gives this benediction to the people that are assembled. It says, when Solomon had finished praying this entire prayer and supplication to the Lord, he arose from before the altar of the Lord, from kneeling on his knees with his hands spread towards heaven. And he stood and blessed all the assembly of Israel with a loud voice, saying, blessed be Yahweh, who has given rest to his people Israel, according to all that he has promised through Moses, his servant. May Yahweh our God be with us as he was with our fathers. May he not leave us or forsake us, that he may incline our ears, hearts to himself, and to walk in all his ways, to keep his commandments and his statutes and his ordinances, which he commanded of our fathers. And may these words of mine with which I have made supplication before the Lord be near to Yahweh our God day and night, that he may maintain the cause of his servants and the cause of his people Israel as each day requires, so that all the peoples of the earth may know that Yahweh is God and there is no one else. Let your heart, therefore, be wholly devoted to the Lord our God, to walk in his statutes and keep his commandments as at this day. Now, the 2 Chronicles passage is not that long. It's more of a summary of the benediction. But the thing you would note there is that Solomon, at this point in his life, is dedicated himself to following God and is exhorting all of the people to carefully follow him. Then there are a couple of miraculous signs that accompany the dedication. 1 Kings 8:54 and 2 Chronicles 7 and verse 1. says at the end of Solomon's prayer that fire fell from heaven upon the altar and consumed the sacrifices. So that more or less dedicated the altar, that the original fire of the altar came directly from heaven and was kept burning after that. And then the glory of the Lord, 2 Chronicles 7 and verse 1, filled the entire temple. So whether this is a reference to a second filling with the smoke, they took the nave or the holy place as well as what happened in the most holy place earlier, or whether it's all one event and it's just mentioned twice, I really, really don't know. But it's possible that only those who witnessed the placing of the ark into the most holy place witnessed the cloud filling the most holy place. And this occurrence, along with the fire falling upon the altar, was a display of God's acceptance that all the people witnessed, knowing then that he had accepted the dedication of this temple to him. And then this dedication was more than just a one-day event. It's described in 1 Kings 8, 62 through 64, which I'll read, and also in 2 Chronicles 7, verses 4 through 7. It says, "Now the king and all Israel with him offered sacrifices before the Lord. And Solomon offered for the sacrifice of peace offerings, which he offered to the Lord, 22,000 oxen and 120,000 sheep. So the king and all the sons of Israel dedicated the house of the Lord. And on the same day, the king consecrated the middle of the court that was the house of the Lord, because there he offered the burnt offerings and grain offerings and fat of the peace offerings. For the bronze altar that was before the Lord was too small to hurl the burnt offering and the grain offering and the fat of the peace offerings." And so even though that brazen altar that we saw last week as we studied the construction, that was built up on steps and was a fairly good-sized altar, it's not going to handle the sacrifice of this many animals. And so what it says is that he built altars through the entire court for the dedication. And so there were sacrifices going on all around the temple, and not just on the altar that, once the temple was dedicated, would be the primary location of the burnt offerings. And then 1 Kings chapter 8, verses 65 and 66, and 2 Chronicles 7, 8 through 10, makes mention that all of this was a part of a large feast, and the total time of that feast was 14 days. For 7 days, they celebrated the dedication of the altar, and for another 7 days, the dedication of the temple. And at the conclusion of that, the people were dismissed. And so what the indication is there is that of course, one of the things that's true of the sacrifice system is that the person offering the sacrifice ate of some of the sacrifice. And so it appears that the volume of things that were sacrificed, Solomon provided through the sacrifice the food for all the people who were in Jerusalem for the dedication of the temple. And they all participated in that way in the sacrifices that were done at this time. And so that concludes the portion of the study where we focused on the physical temple that is erected in Jerusalem. But like many of the details of the Old Testament, the temple served as a foreshadowing of a greater spiritual reality that would be realized when the Messiah came from God. And so there's going to be several more lessons in the series, but those lessons will focus on those matters about the spiritual fulfillment of our temple as it is in the New Testament. There'll be at least three of those as well, which I will start when I get back from this trip. So I thank you for your attention there. Brother John has the prayer, and then we'll go to our class.